A new report from the CDC finds higher rates of certain medical conditions among young people who have had COVID-19. Research found some serious conditions like myocarditis to be more common, also found higher rates of symptoms associated with long COVID among children who had tested positive for the disease. Many of those conditions are still uncommon, though, even for kids who have had COVID. The news comes as parents and caregivers prepare to send kids back to school. CDC out with some new school guidelines today. Thought it'd be a good time to check in about what we know about COVID-19 and younger people in the back-to-school season. You can join in at 800-642-1234. As a parent, is COVID on your mind as school gets ready to reopen? If you work in a school, what kind of preparations are there, aren't there? What kind of changes are you expecting to see from last year? Are you worried? Do you have questions for our guest? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Dr. James Conway is a pediatric infectious disease specialist with the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Conway, welcome back to the show.
Great to be back, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with this report out from the CDC looking at the longer-term health impacts of COVID-19 on kids. There's a lot in there. What are some of the key findings that you saw there?
Yeah, it was a really interesting way of looking at this. And they basically took kids that had had contact with the medical system for COVID or those who had never had any evidence of COVID over a 2-year period. And what they did was basically just compare a whole bunch of different disorders that might have been diagnosed. And what we found was that you had about twice the risk of having clotting episodes that would lead to things like pulmonary embolisms or thromboembolic events, so basically sort of deep vein thromboses and things like that. Your risk was about doubled if you were a kid that got COVID compared to one that didn't get COVID. And then, as you mentioned, you know, this myocarditis cardiomyopathy thing, also about double the risk. But lots of other stuff in there as well, certainly smell and taste disturbances, similar to what the adults have. The interesting part also was what wasn't there, and that COVID kids don't seem to have quite as much in the long COVID neurologic symptoms, nor do they have the long-term lung problems. So very different from what we see in a lot of the adults. And I think we're learning a lot continuing as we go forward to realize the kids and adults with COVID actually are really very different.
Now, I don't want to panic people out here. We say these rates of some of these conditions are doubled. That's going from really, really rare to just kind of rare. Is that about the right perspective there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that in general, kids are pretty healthy and overall do pretty well with most of the things that that we're talking about here. However, you know, one of the things we need to be cautious about is that this may actually be an underestimate. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is because these are kids that were the comparison group who had had some kind of contact with the medical system. And so the presumption is that they may have actually had illnesses that kind of brought them in. So it's a little bit of an imperfect way of doing this because, you know, to ideally do this correctly, you would have compared kids with COVID versus everybody that didn't have COVID, not just the ones that didn't have COVID, but also had contact with the medical system. So some people are actually saying that this may slightly underestimate, but either way, you know, I think in general, these things are relatively rare, but still doubling your risk of something, you know, especially as severe as having a blood clot or a pulmonary embolus is certainly something to take seriously.
I want to key in on myocarditis for a moment, because that's a symptom, a sign that was an extremely rare outcome of a COVID vaccine. I think some of the early findings were. But it sounds like, if I'm reading the numbers right, and please correct me if I'm wrong, actually having COVID is a much greater risk for myocarditis than the really, really rare risk from the vaccine.
Yeah, that's been true all along. And you're right. You know, this has been a concern that people have expressed, that there is a rare but, you know, certainly reportable issue with myocarditis, especially in healthy teenagers that get their vaccines very close together. You know, the risk of getting myocarditis from the infection itself, from the COVID virus itself, depending on the age group, is somewhere between 20 and 60 times higher risk than it is from the vaccine. And this new study basically highlighted that as we know now with COVID, it really does cause a lot of inflammation all throughout the body. And in particular, in the heart and the blood vessels are really the two areas that it seems to be very unique.
And Dr. Conway, there are a lot of, I think, open question marks about the long-term impacts of COVID for grown-ups and for kids. What kind of research would you hope to see in addition to this kind of innovative way, as you mentioned, of doing it? What are you hoping to see to learn more about longer-term COVID impacts for kids?
Yeah, it's really tricky and it's hard to do. You know, I think there's a lot of attention at this about this at the federal level in trying to establish sort of long-term funding to follow people with COVID who have residual symptoms. You know, we're hoping that there's going to be more of this kind of work also in kids. What really needs to be done, I think, is comparing how this looks for people that are vaccinated and get COVID versus people that are unvaccinated and get COVID. That's, I think, really going to be one of the key pieces of this. But it's pretty clear that adults get a very different version of longer COVID. They get a lot more neurologic stuff. They have a lot more long-term lung disorders. Kids do seem to be a little bit more spared from large numbers of them, at least having long-term problems. But when they do, they certainly are significant. You know, the other things in here was this issue of kidney failure. And one of the ones that we saw early in the pandemic that seems to have held up, which was an increased risk of developing diabetes after getting a COVID infection. So, you know, while they're all rare, you certainly want to do everything you can to protect the kids from getting any of these things.
Talking to Dr. James Conway, pediatric infectious disease specialist at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at COVID-19 and kids as we head to the back to school season. Do you have worries on your mind, questions, hopes for this new school year? You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you are a kid, a parent thereof, a teacher or other school worker, do you have questions for our guest? What is the school year? What do you know about precautions or changes coming into the fall? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Dr. Conway, when it comes to getting ready for the new school year, I saw kind of a Q&A with a bunch of different vaccine experts, disease experts, things like that. The most consistent answer so many gave for concerned parents was get your kid vaccinated. Is that still a solid advice?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, why not? You know, the safety is clear that these vaccines are extraordinarily safe. They certainly work well. They're not perfect. But, you know, what we're really trying to do is prevent severe disease, prevent these kinds of outcomes, but also keep schools open and keep kids in school. And so as much as we can to keep them healthy from all sorts of different diseases, it's really important to do that. But the more people that get vaccinated, the less likelihood there are going to be widespread outbreaks, because those are what potentially leads to the need to close schools and things like that. So without any question, vaccines are still our best way of managing this going forward.
Now, the CDC is out with new guidelines. These just came out earlier today. For schools, it gets pretty fine-toothed here. What are some of the key things that people who run schools should be thinking about when it comes to COVID safety in this school year?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still going through these because you're right. They just popped into all of our inbox earlier today. But basically what they're doing is lifting this whole idea of quarantine, which is that after you've been exposed to somebody with COVID that you need to confine yourself. They're really allowing people, after they've been exposed, to continue to go about their business. You know, certainly if they get symptoms, then they go into isolation for 5 days and then can come out of isolation, but still wearing a mask for the other 5 days. But the big change is really that they're going to stop asking people to remove themselves from society after they've been exposed. And I think it makes sense that, you know, we know that there's a lot of home testing going on. These things don't get reported. And to be honest, people are busy and can't really restrict themselves that much. People have missed so much school and work already. So it's really giving permission to people, for people to do what they've already kind of been doing, which is to, you know, monitor yourself, especially after you're getting exposed. If you get any symptoms, we all owe it to each other to take the responsibility to pull ourselves away. But just an exposure doesn't get you into quarantine. And so schools, at least, I think it'll make it a little bit easier for them to keep functioning. The kids with symptoms, the kids that test positive, stay home. But just because somebody in a classroom gets exposed doesn't mean that they have to also stay out. And I think that's going to be really helpful, especially with the young kids in the daycares.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Mike is with us in Minocqua. Mike, hello.
Hi. I was just wondering if we understand any better what contribution kids make, especially as they go back to school and mix with one another, to community spread of COVID. Do we understand
that? Great question.
Yeah,
really great question. And this is something that's really being investigated extensively. There's some recent data that actually just came out in the last couple of weeks that seems to suggest that kids don't seem to shed quite as much virus as adults, and that they seem to have a little bit better ability to handle the mucosal part of this. In other words, as you get the virus and it lands on the surface of your nose and throat, it starts replicating. But kids seem to be very, very rigorous in far as how they respond, and they develop a much quicker immune response. They don't seem to shed nearly as much as adults do in some of these small studies. And so I think that while we're always worried about them being able to introduce it, especially to vulnerable members of the population, they don't seem to be quite as much of a driver of the bigger outbreaks happening as adults do. I think the other is that, you know, we've always known for a lot of diseases that kids just don't cough and sneeze quite hard enough to aerosolize things. We know that kids under the age of five very rarely spread tuberculosis, for instance, to other people. So once you get to about age five or six is when you actually can cough and sneeze hard enough to really aerosolize these things. So, you know, they're certainly not unrelated to the ongoing outbreaks, but they don't seem to be as much of a driver as the adults are in a lot of these outbreaks.
Mike, thanks a lot for calling in. We're talking to Dr. James Conway, pediatric infectious disease specialist with UW-Madison. He's with us today to talk about new research about the health impacts on kids who have had COVID-19 and what you need to know about COVID-19 risks ahead of back to school over the course of the next few weeks. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about COVID-19 and the back-to-school season? Is there a concern you have, a nagging question, whether you're a student, a parent, or a teacher? What is your school going to look like this fall? Is it different than when the school year ended last year? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our conversation about COVID-19 and children as parents and caregivers get ready to send kids back to school. Dr. James Conway with UW-Madison stays with us, pediatric infectious disease specialist, and you can join in. If you have questions at 800-642-1234, back to school concerns, whether you're a student yourself, a parent, or a teacher, 800-642-1234 is the number to call or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go back to your calls now. Bill is with us in Madison. Bill, hi.
Hi. I have my concern, of course, and this getting this news out, everybody's talking about the confusion, even the medical. We don't know why kids are getting type 1 diabetes and on and on. I'm a type 1 diabetic. I was diagnosed at a young age because my immune system was heightened, you know, fighting off flu virus or whatever. So it's simple to me that the fact is kids are very susceptible. Parents need to be aware of this. Whether or not your child got COVID or not, the immune system is becoming aggressive, and that's when it can go after the cells in the pancreas causing type 1 diabetes. And I just want to mention that and get a comment. My niece is 3 years old, got COVID, and I told my brothers, pay attention because the immune system is heightened.
I gotcha. So, Bill, thanks a lot for the call. Dr. Conway, I've heard some preliminary research into the relationship between COVID and both type 1 and type 2 diabetes, if I'm not mistaken. What do we know so far?
Yeah, Bill's onto something here. You know, that we know that for a lot of these disorders, that it's what we call two hits, where there's a genetic predisposition to something, and then something else hits that kid and turns on their immune system, and it kind of pushes them over the brink. And so type 1 diabetes seems to be in that category. There are also though people who don't seem to have a predisposition, you know, they don't have a family history, and their immune system can just get really turned on by almost anything. And he's right, influenza and many other viruses can do it as well. And so we see that after certain outbreaks of viral diseases, that there are increased rates of all sorts of diseases where the immune system does get a little bit overzealous and starts attacking things. And in fact, you know, in addition to type 1 diabetes in this study, a lot of these clotting and other cardiac things are basically very similar, where, you know, a lot of things can turn on the immune system and cause it to actually start to cause increased clotting, and then side effects from that as you kind of clot off blood vessels that feed important organs. So more and more study going into that, but he's right, it's kind of nonspecific. And so that's one of the reasons everything you can do to protect kids against viral illnesses is important. And that's why getting back to school is a good time to think about this, because lots of kids are behind on lots of different vaccines that protect them against all sorts of different disorders.
Bill, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Dr. Conway, can you talk us through the current vaccine guidelines for kids, school age and below? It can be easy to lose track of how many shots they're supposed to get when.
Yeah, good question, Rob. I'll try to keep it as simple as possible. So, you know, basically everybody obviously is supposed to have had a primary series of vaccines, which for most people is two doses of a Pfizer or Moderna vaccine. For immune compromised people, they get a third dose as their primary series. Then for everybody over age 50 or everybody who's got an immune compromising condition over age 12, those people should actually have now had two boosters since their original primary series. Everybody else who's healthy over age 5 should have had one booster by now. So again, everybody should have a primary series. Healthy kids over age 5 then should also have a single booster already. And then for a select group of people in the over age 50 group and people that have underlying immune compromising conditions, they should actually have gotten their second booster by now. And unfortunately, you know, we saw data come out from the Kaiser Family Foundation last week that about 70% of Americans are actually not up to date if you include this booster stuff in the schedule that they really should have gotten. So while you'll see on a lot of websites, you know, people proudly saying that 90% of Americans over age 65 have had their vaccines, or 65% of the general population in Wisconsin, that's sort of a false narrative, because that's only that primary series. And really everybody should have gotten at least one booster, and a whole bunch of people should have gotten a second one by now.
Talking to Dr. James Conway, pediatric infectious disease specialist with the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at the latest news about COVID-19 and kids as we head into back-to-school season. Still time for your questions at 800-642-1234. Dr. Conway, you alluded to other vaccinations. I've seen concerns that for one reason or another, kids aren't getting some of those, you know, standard vaccinations and in high enough numbers, maybe because COVID cut off their access to healthcare one way or another, maybe because of wider vaccine skepticism. What are you seeing? What kind of concerns do you have?
Yeah, this is really a global phenomenon where we're seeing kids across the globe over these last couple of years have really missed out on opportunities to be vaccinated. And then even, you know, as you start to emerge into a more normal activities, you know, it's really hard to get appointments now because people are just trying to catch up with all sorts of medical disorders that need to be evaluated and seen. And so, you know, people have really gotten backed up. In some areas, we're seeing as many as 30% of the kids are now behind, you know, and these are families that had really been dedicated to keeping their kids vaccinated. It just wasn't easy to do it. So the concern is that we're starting to see the emergence of diseases that we previously had under control. There's measles outbreaks in a couple different countries in Africa. We've started to see emergence of measles getting into Europe now. There's polio, as people have seen, just popped up in New York and in London. So this is kind of a global phenomenon. And so as people are now in August and getting towards back to school, really important to check in and make sure that not only the things you need right away, but also making sure that there aren't other things that need to be scheduled to be completely caught up over the next couple months.
I should ask, people maybe wondering, what about masks in schools? What are your thoughts on when, if, and where people should be wearing masks in school buildings?
Yeah, it's still pretty controversial. I mean, I think that they're certainly valuable when there's respiratory illnesses around. I mean, obviously, we've kept them in the medical system consistently and probably will indefinitely because, you know, these viruses actually circulate all year around. And there's lots of viruses that do have a different seasonality. It's not just winter. In schools, you know, it's obviously pretty hard for kids to be able to communicate and learn as much as they want to while wearing masks. And so I think it's going to be one of those things that if we don't have very good immunization rates, I think schools are going to have to consider going back to masks when there's outbreaks of any kind of respiratory disease, even if it's flu or other respiratory viruses. For schools that have pretty good immunization rates, you know, I think that they may have a little bit more latitude to be able to hold off on the masking, even if there's an occasional case here and there. So I think a lot of it really depends on kind of what the community has done as far as getting the kids in that school vaccinated. But I do think we're going to see that masks periodically reemerging and coming out once in a while when you do have the beginnings of widespread disease.
Now, something that parents and kids and teachers, for that matter, don't have direct control over is ventilation in school buildings. I've seen, again, some experts saying this could be a key to helping with not just COVID, but other diseases that spread through the air. Are you hoping that this will be taken seriously?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, there's a lot of older school buildings that, you know, live on radiator heat and don't even have air conditioning. All they've got is windows. And I think people are going to need to start being creative, especially if we get into cold, flu, and COVID season all happening together. You know, we've seen during the early parts of the COVID outbreak in New York City and others that tried to keep their schools open, that even the winter they ended up keeping the windows open to try to keep some circulation going. But I do think that as we move forward and schools are being, you know, gradually rebuilt and retooled, that that air circulation is going to be really, really important. And not just in schools, I think in lots of other buildings, I think we're starting to see a really more attention to what your air circulation looks like in wherever you work, live, and go to school.
In just our last less than a minute now, what are you watching for, Dr. Conway, as this disease progresses into the fall?
Yeah, I think we're still watching the emergence of these new variants. We're still kind of stuck on BA5 here in the United States in that Omicron strain, but we're tracking a couple of other both new Omicron variants that are starting to pop up in various areas, as well as keeping a close eye out for the newer strains that may actually emerge from new mutations. And then the other piece, obviously, is various companies are working on trying to develop more specific boosters against some of these variants. But I think really the key is going to be just getting people boosted with whatever we've got on hand. I think we always have to remember we can't let perfect be the enemy of good enough.
Dr. Conway, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob. Always a pleasure.
That's Dr. James Conway, pediatric infectious disease specialist with UW School of Medicine and Public Health, with us today to talk about a new report about the health effects on young people who have had COVID-19 and for some advice on what parents and caregivers need to know about the pandemic ahead of the fall school start.